Welcome to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio with author, speaker, and your host, Pat Rulo. Serving you a generous helping of everything you need to know to help you and your loved ones stay safe during any doctor or hospital visit. The program is not intended to replace medical advice from a licensed professional, but rather to encourage you to become a well-informed participant in your health and well-being. And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
Hello and welcome. I'm Pat Rulo, your hostess and the voice for patient safety. Another week has passed so quickly, and we're back together again. Thank you for showing up. I hope you had a fantastic week. Mine was rather uneventful, and that is just fine with me. I did get many emails and lots of feedback on our new line of tinydropseo.com, our essential oils, however, and before we get started on the program today, I'd like to share one in particular. The subject line was Tiny Drops, yay! And it read, "Hi Pat, I thought I would send you a quick note before I start my day. My husband is sole proprietor of a fertilizing business, and he wears gloves daily to protect his hands. But he developed a nasty-looking rash on the back of both hands, and I quickly got out my essential oils and combined three recommended for skin problems, tea tree, lavender, and eucalyptus. And in just a couple of days, his hands were completely healed up. I love using natural methods where I don't have to read the ingredients or have side effects. Once again, I have benefited from listening, learning, and applying your wisdom." Now, how nice was that? That just made my day. And oh, what the heck. Here's another one I thought was important. A gentleman writes, "Pat, now that my three-year-old son is in daycare, I'm getting all kinds of nasty kid germs. And last week, boy, was I sick. My wife was at work, and I was all alone to fend for myself. And then I remembered the Tiny Drops essential oils she purchased from you, and here's what I did. I made my own chest balm. Who needs VapoRub? I added a few drops of peppermint and tea tree oil to some coconut oil and spread it over my chest and under my nose, and I got instant relief from the symptoms. Thank you, and thank my wife, for listening to your program every week." I like that one too. So those are just a few of the many comments on the beneficial aspects of essential oils. So thank you to everyone who wrote to me to share their stories. And with that in mind, I'm going to continue for a few minutes about some additional essential oil health solutions. And then later in the program, my guest is an expert when it comes to conflict resolution. And we are going to focus on avoiding conflicts within a healthcare setting when talking with our doctors. So that will be interesting and important for you to hear. So let's get rolling, because right now it's time for the healthcare hazard of the week. Well, folks, old man winter is on the way. Ooh, why is it called old man winter? Oh no, gender bias, call the cops. Anyway, 'tis the season when we see more colds and flu. According to the Centers for Disease Prevention and Wellness, over 200 viruses have been identified to be associated with the common cold. Yet we see on every street corner, pharmacies advertising flu shots with predictable scare tactics. Many health-conscious people gear up for the flu by getting an annual shot, but then they gasp in shock and amazement when they come down with it anyway. Now, whether you blame it on the fact that the vaccine does not defend the body against all 200 possible strains of influenza, or the shot itself is the culprit, flu inoculations do not always work. They also do not prevent or lessen the severity of the common cold. They don't halt stomach bugs or deter other health issues associated with the colder months. So rather than waiting for something to find us and knock us down this season, why don't we take a preemptive and proactive approach? Because there are effective alternatives to staying healthy this season. Number one on my list is consistent hand washing, and that is a very good place to start. Make it a habit to wash your hands the moment you come home. Don't touch the refrigerator door. Don't grab a cookie. Don't cross-contaminate all over your house. I mean, if you've been out and about, at work, the grocery store, the bank, or even just touching the steering wheel of your car, you have community germs on your hands. Potential MRSA, viruses, mold, E. coli. Disgusting. So wash your hands first and make sure everyone who lives with you does the same. Bob. And to maintain good health this winter season, cut down on or eliminate sugar entirely from your diet. Yeah, great. No holiday cookies for you. And be sure to get enough sleep in a bedroom that is free from all electronic devices. That means no Wi-Fi, no routers, no portable phones, no cell phones. You know the drill. These are all good ways to boost immunity, but they're not always enough. But you can effectively prepare for any viral onslaught by incorporating the use of essential oils into your natural healthcare routine. Aromatherapy can boost the body's defenses where good intentions leave off. So I guess you can grab a cookie and grab some essential oils. Like any other avenue to wellness, it works best before the problem arises. Now, some people complain that essential oils did not work for them during the flu season, not realizing that they used the same oils habitually, did not use them regularly, or used inappropriate ones. Using essential oils correctly is the key. I'm going to share a few of those with you. Here's a few tips that can make all the difference this coming winter and all year long. Here's some steps to correctly using essential oils. Do not use the same oil or a combination of oils for longer than 7 to 10 days, because the body can actually build a tolerance to it, and thereby weakening the effects of the oils. So to avoid immunity to the essential oils, alternate single oils and combination formulas every other week. That's simple to do. Number two, do not think a few applications of essential oils will boost your immune system for months to come. You have to maintain a step ahead and use essential oils regularly, which means daily, or at least 3 to 4 times a week. And one of the best ways to apply them is undiluted to the soles of your feet at bedtime. And I'll talk about that a little bit more later on. Number three, do not shower for at least 7 hours after applying essential oils. So giving them a chance to work. Number four, do not assume that all essential oils fight viruses. All oils are antibacterial, but only a few possess truly antiviral properties. And we'll get to that. And number five, and very important, use half or even less of the recommended amount for children. You do not want to apply essential oils directly to children's skin. And I do have a link on our website, tinydropseo.com, that will give you some tips and hints on using essential oils for babies and children. Now, since essential oil is a plant's own defense against disease, it does the same for us when we apply it either by itself or in a combination. When applied undiluted to the soles of your feet, and I'm talking about the soft, uncalloused part between the ball of the foot and the heel, the antiviral-like properties of certain essential oils reach the bloodstream within 20 minutes and the deepest cellular level within 7 to 24 hours. Immune-boosting essential oils can be your best ally throughout the year, but if you want to gear up for the flu season this winter, it's best to armor your body now before the snow flies. So here's a list of essential oils you will want to have on hand and the reasons why, and you can get them at tinydropseo.com. The first is clove bud oil, one of the most powerful and reliable essential oils in clinical aromatherapy. Clove combats contagious disease, and it's an excellent oil to use for any bacterial, viral, or fungal infection. It's also actually recommended for Lyme disease. So here's how to use it. 4 drops undiluted on each sole of the foot. And it works even better when layered with lemongrass essential oil and used in combination 2 to 3 times a week for 7 days. Then after a week, use another single oil or a combination. You do want to avoid clove bud essential oil if you are on blood thinners. So there's a little caution for you. Then we have eucalyptus oil. Eucalyptus is one of the most valuable of essential oils. It has a potent antiviral, antibacterial, and antifungal properties, and it's highly effective for bacterial and viral infections of the respiratory system. Menthol-rich, eucalyptus eases the pain of muscles and joints associated with influenza, and it strengthens the immune system to fight viruses and bacteria. It also combats infectious fevers. Eucalyptus breaks up chest congestion when diluted and applied to the chest and throat in non-asthmatics. So if you have asthma, be wary of using eucalyptus. So how to use it? A few drops added to a pot or a heat-proof boil of hot water will make a wonderful steam for inflamed sinuses associated with head colds or chronic sinusitis. Then we have lavender essential oil. This oil is the primary oil to have on hand at home and while traveling. How to use? 4 drops undiluted on each sole of the foot. And lavender even works better when layered with lemongrass essential oil and used in combination, again, 2 to 3 times a week for 7 days. And after a week, use another single oil or a combination. And then let's talk about lemongrass. Lemongrass essential oil is one of the most potent oils and the first to go to when your immunity is compromised. It stimulates white blood cell production and boosts immunity against serious infection, including pneumonia and staph. So how to use this? Again, 4 drops undiluted on each sole of the foot kills viruses and bacteria when diffused into the air via our spray mist. And we do offer a spray mist of all of our 8 essential oils at the tinydropseo.com website. And this way you can just spray it and spritz it and mist it all around the room and on you. Then we have tea tree oil. Tea tree oil is a powerful and reliable oil for the immune system that is best when combined with either lemongrass, clove, or lavender essential oils to fight infection and flu. And the same way, use 4 drops undiluted on each sole of your feet. Now, it's really not necessary to have a whole bunch of oils at home. It's more important to choose wisely what oils you buy. And that's why we've narrowed it down to our top 8 healing oils. And quality is very important since many companies dilute their oils with synthetic substances to cut costs. And this can cause harm and change the therapeutic effect of oil. And our oils at tinydropseo.com are 100% pure therapeutic grade. I would not use or offer anything less. Again, you don't need all of them, but research has shown that there is a greater antimicrobial activity when several oils are combined. Therefore, I like to mix several different oils into one blend for enhanced value. So I suggest be ahead of the game and use these essential oils before you need them. You can be creative in how you use essential oils during this time of year. You could make homemade cleaners with essential oils. You could sniff them straight from the bottle. Add essential oils to lotion or liquid soap or shampoo. Add a few drops to your dishwashing soap or clothes washer. Put a few drops on a cotton ball and inhale. Add some to your bath and shower floors. There's so many ways to use them. Now, what about when somebody is sick? Here's a couple things you can do if you get sick. At the first sign of a stuffy nose, inhale deeply straight from the bottle. Or mix the essential oils with massage oil and apply on affected areas such as the chest, sinus, or back. You can add a few drops to the palm of your hand and then cup your hands together over your nose and mouth and inhale deeply. Just remember, don't touch your eyes. You can clear congested sinuses within a few hours by doing steam inhalations. Simply add a few drops of oil to a bowl of warm water, not boiling water, and inhale the steaming vapors from the bowl. And if you want to increase that intensity, drape a towel over your head and the bowl before inhaling. And I mentioned you can add essential oils to the bottom of your feet. And this is especially useful for children since some oils may be too strong to apply on other parts of their body. Add a few drops to your pillow before falling asleep. Or a steamy 15-minute bath or shower helps too. Drip 10 drops of essential oil into the tub or onto a washcloth placed on the shower floor and then breathe in deeply. And you can find 8 of the most versatile and healing oils at our website, tinydropseo.com. We have clove bud, eucalyptus, frankincense, lavender, lemongrass, peppermint, sweet orange, and tea tree. And they're only $7.99 for each 10 milliliter bottle. Or you can get the entire set of 8 at a discounted price of $55 plus shipping. You can't beat that. And I do want to mention that these oils are not part of a multi-level marketing program or company. It's just me. And I am offering them from me to you solely as a way to offer options and alternatives that do not have scary side effects and toxic or synthetic chemicals. Essential oils are 100% plant-derived with nothing else added. And I say, if it's good enough for Mother Nature, it's good enough for me. Uh-oh. Mother Nature? Why not Father Nature? Oh, we started the show with gender bias, and we're ending it with gender bias. Call the cops! Or call me to order your essential oils, 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. Tiny drops, big results at tinydropseo.com. That's tinydropseo.com. You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo. So happy that you're joining me today. I'd like to share something with you that I read recently because it hit me so hard. I knew at the moment that I had to share it with you. It was written by Dr. Louis M. Profeta, an emergency physician practicing in Indianapolis. He is the author of the critically acclaimed book, The Patient in Room 9 Says He's God. So I reached out to Dr. Profeta to ask for his permission to read his article to you, and within minutes he got back to me and he said, sure, and thank you. So, here is the article. What do you do for a living? The young man asked me. I'm an emergency physician. How about you? I'm just a chef, he replied. Pal, I can live a lifetime without medicine. I can only live a week without food. Sometimes a group of people you speak to love you. Other times, well, hate may be a bit strong, but they are far less enamored with what you have to say. And this is a tale of the latter. And to tell you the truth, I'm kind of proud of it. Recently, an incredibly inspiring physician invited me to speak at a conference, the central theme being burnout in medicine. I really thought I had a handle on this, being that I had been practicing emergency medicine for nearly 25 years, and I did not feel burned out, which, as I just learned, is way above the average for emergency room physicians who typically have a burnout rate of more than 50%. In fact, in our very large private physician group, the rate of burnout and attrition is, well, darn near close to zero. So why is that? What were we doing right? Certainly, we are all very supportive of each other. We are all completely bogged down in electronic medical record keeping, seas of bureaucracy, fears of malpractice, and other stressors, including working far more hours than most other physicians in our specialty. What is it about us? I truly think it comes to four simple words that all of us have grown to embrace. Those words, it's just a job. Let that sink in a bit. Because when I proposed that to this group of nurses, physicians, and nurse practitioners, you would have thought I just stood up and proclaimed I was an antichrist, even though I prefaced it during my talk by elaborating and saying that medicine is a deeply rewarding career choice. I insisted that it is not our life. I tried to express that it's simply a wonderful, marvelous, and mystical avenue to allow us the opportunity to pursue a meaningful work, make a good living, support our families, and to do a job that allows us to see and do many magical things. I also said that I felt it was not a prerequisite to always practice with compassion. Compassion means to suffer with others. I propose that we do not need to suffer. Our role is to be there, provide comfort, alleviate suffering, listen, and be engaged. But we don't have to feel every bit of it viscerally. But certainly there will be times when we truly connect, and we will. But it's also okay when we don't. We don't have to take every single emotion home, internalize it, and make it part of our being, which in today's society of rapid extrapolation registered as, he must not listen to his patients. I try to explain that I feel our emotions wax and wane day to day and minute to minute. It does not mean for one second that we are incapable of providing excellent care during those times, and that this emotional separation does keep you sane and helps prevent burnout and allows you to focus on your job. Well, that wasn't good enough for these attendees. In fact, one pretty much raised her hand, took the mic, and said she was highly offended that I would say or even imply that medicine was just a job. She said she would not want to have a physician like me, and there is no way that you can fake compassion. Well, that's when Starbucks entered my brain. How often does a barista smile at you, thank you, and tell you to have a good day? How often do you walk away feeling good that he or she was so welcoming and friendly? How often do you know what happened to them last night, what news they got this morning, how much money is in their bank account, what their marriage is like? Let me help you out with that answer. Pretty much never. So do you think that patients are any different than you in those moments? You smile, listen, stroke their hands, and offer words of comfort. Do you think the patient pauses and asks themselves about what happened to you last night, how marriage is, what's going on in your life? They just want to feel comforted. One attendee warmly smirked at me earlier at dinner. I just don't buy your assertion that it's just a job. She motioned to the bartender. Look, he just pours drinks, and you say my job is no different than his? I tilted my glasses down and stared into her eyes. What if I told you that he works three jobs to support a disabled child at home, and that this late night job affords him the opportunity to buy her a few things that make her smile and feel special. Perhaps some toys he could not otherwise afford, or a new dress, perhaps. You think your job is so much better than his because you hold someone's hand when they are sick instead of passing a beer? I like to think she bowed her head a bit, in shame perhaps, but I'm not sure. As the discussion went on that morning, a common theme emerged. Many of these people did not want suggestions on how to keep from being burned out. What they wanted was to be fawned over and congratulated on how compassionate they were and how they had the hardest jobs in the world and that no one could possibly understand the work or appreciate how hard their jobs were. "I'm sorry," I said, "you just don't buy it. You invited me. I'm not here to validate you. That has to come from within." You see, I think we are a bit elitist as to how we view ourselves in medicine at times. Sure, this is a very hard job, charged with emotion. It leads to crying, heartbreak, and nightmares on occasion. But it's also filled with incredible rewards, both spiritually and even financially. One physician, who was a physician and also a faculty member at Duke's School of Divinity, disagreed with my assertion and proposed that medicine was different, though. In a way, it was an embodiment of Christ's principles of healing and was perhaps the very first real charitable endeavor. I turned to him and said something to the effect, "Yeah, that's all fine and dandy, but if it weren't for the farmers, shepherds, and fishermen during that time, the weak and infirm would just have been a source of protein." One attendee lamented about caring for a patient who was recovering from a procedure that went against her own personal values. She said she was distressed and angered by this. I believe what she hoped for was for me to embrace her distress, validate it, provide words of comfort and support, and give advice on how to change. Even though, mind you, she said the patient was happy and very comforted by her care. I looked at her and responded, "So what? That's your job. You were supposed to provide care regardless of your values." She snapped at me, "Yeah, but what about me?" "What about you?" I replied. "It's not about you. It's about your patient. It's about caring for your patient. That's what you signed up for." This gave an opportunity for another speaker to chime in and take advantage of what he felt was an oratory faux pas. "I believe this is more than a job. It's a passion," with reverent emphasis on the word passion. The crowd nodded in agreement and then turned and glared at me some more. I gave them one of those head-tilting, whatever, looks. Listen, your passion should be your family, those around you that you love. You have to separate the two. There is not one of you that would not abandon your job for the sake of someone who you love and who needs you. You see, I know this from experience, from deep within my gut. 2 Septembers ago, I got a call from a hospital in New York. My son, who was in college at the time, was just diagnosed with leukemia. 15 minutes later, I jumped in a car and drove all night to New York, pretty much crying and pounding the steering wheel all along the way. I called one of my partners and said, "I am not coming to work. I have no idea how long I'll be gone. If you need to hire someone to replace me, go ahead." Go right ahead. I slept in a chair next to his bed for 42 days. Do you think for one second I regretted not going to work? I'd give up medicine and clean outhouses at Woodstock for all eternity if it meant I could help my child. People in medicine often say you can't separate the two. I say, "Cowpucky, you just don't know any better." Listen, no matter how much we like to hold up ourselves as pillars of compassion, the keepers of the public well-being, we are just one profession out of countless others that keep our world moving. We are no more heroes than the social worker visiting homes in the projects, the farmer up at 4 to feed the cattle, the iron worker strapped to the beam on the 50th floor. We are no more a hero than the single mom working overnight as a custodian trying to feed her kids. We are no more heroic than countless others who work in jobs they perhaps hate in order to care for and support the people they love. Maybe I'm wrong in telling the group that medicine is just a job. But I am darn sure we in medicine are all wrong if we think our job is somehow more special and valuable than the bartender's. Well, there you have it. And the reason this made an impact on me is twofold. First, during some of my live speaking events, I ask the audience to raise their hands if they feel comfortable asking their doctor or nurse to wash their hands before touching them. Maybe 3 people raise their hands. The reason why? Because Ooh, he's a doctor. Ooh, she's a doctor. She's a nurse. He's an aide. Oh, and in my mind, I'm thinking, so what? It's just a job. Nothing more important than what you and I do for a living. It doesn't define who we are. It's just a job. Well, I mean, sure, we can feel passionate about our jobs, and hopefully we do. But at the end of the day, it really is not who we are. So maybe we can keep this in mind the next time a healthcare provider approaches us and clearly has not made an effort to keep us safe by washing his or her hands. Maybe this story will empower and embolden us to speak up. And secondly, remember during Dr. Profeta's article when he mentioned that almost never do we know anything about our doctor or nurse or other care provider? We selfishly assume that it's all about us, that it doesn't matter if the doctor just got her car sideswiped on her way to the hospital, or that the nurse's son is home with the measles. We don't know, and frankly, we don't care. But I must say that I do care. I really did make it a point to strike up a conversation with every healthcare person who tended to my mom. Simple questions. Do you live nearby? Did you watch the game last night? You'd be surprised how one basic question can lead to quickly finding out a lot about the other person. Say, for example, did you watch the game last night? And the nurse replies, no, I couldn't. My son has the measles and was so fussy, I sat with him and read some books. Which leads to the next question, how old is your son? And the next question, what is his name? So the next day when the same nurse comes in, you can ask, how is Johnny? Is he feeling better? Did you get any sleep last night? Now, isn't that simple? It's easy and it's important. Because if we are saying that by being a nurse or by being a doctor is just a job, well, then these people are just people. They are not gods, not beings to be feared. Respected, yes, but placed higher than us? I don't think so. So if they are just people, just doing their jobs, then it should be easy to ask them questions. Ask them to wash their hands before touching you. It's people reaching out to people on equal footing. And that's why I shared this story with you today. So I hope you think about this the next time you have a healthcare or hospital encounter. Remember, it's okay to speak up. As the title of this program tells you, you have to speak up and stay alive.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.
Did you know that over 70 hospitals nationwide are using essential oils to fight germs, improve mood, and reduce stress? I'm Pat Rulo, radio host of Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, with a new line of essential oils called Tiny Drops. Now you too can have access to these amazing natural health options. For example, you can use lavender to reduce stress, sweet orange to improve your mood, peppermint to improve focus and energy and alleviate those headaches. Tiny Drops, big results. Visit tinydropseo.com.
Hot. Bring the heat.
And now, your host, Pat Rulo.
You are listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, always on the lookout for a first-class guest to help you and me stay safe during any healthcare and hospital encounter. And that is why I have Marty Chadwick with us today, a professional mediator and owner of Mediation Path based in Gilbert, Arizona. Marty has been working in and around the healthcare community for well over 30 years, and has experienced healthcare firsthand, both as a patient with and without an advocate, and as an advocate for patients of all ages. As a practicing attorney and as a healthcare and technology executive or consultant, it was consistently clear to Marty that success depended on conflicts being resolved and communications improved so that the result worked for all involved. He has mediated for the Arizona Attorney General's Office, the U.S. Equal Opportunity Commission, and the local justice courts. He has a well-rounded view of conflict within a healthcare setting, making him the perfect resource for our show. Welcome to the show, Marty.
Thank you for having me, Pat.
It's my pleasure. Well, folks, I met Marty at one of my live speaking events, and he was in the audience. And as he and I spoke, we realized that there was so much we wanted to tell you and actually had a rough time zoning in on a topic. But I am asked time after time and over again about how to deal with difficult physicians and nurses. So let's go there and focus on conflict within a healthcare or hospital setting as a patient or an advocate dealing with a doctor, nurse, or other healthcare provider. So Marty, talk us through a conflict. What are people thinking and expecting, and what should they be thinking and expecting? Are they typically two different things?
Well, Pat, you know, as you already know, conflict seems to be everywhere. Unfortunately, in the U.S., most of us have not been trained on how to deal with it, so it can be a real struggle. In its fundamental essence, a conflict is whenever somebody wants something and the other person is unwilling to give it, and there's only one of those somethings. People put themselves in a place where they want to win. So that means, by definition, somebody else needs to lose, and nobody likes that. If we can work our way towards something that's more win-win, how can I win, but how can I let the other person win as well? More of a compromise kind of thing that gets us where we need to be. As we are talking with somebody in this whole process, I know from my own personal experience, especially if it gets a little heated in a discussion, that I'm not really listening to them anymore. But rather what I'm doing is I'm sitting there thinking to myself, what am I going to say the minute that they shut up and give me an opportunity to jump in there? Unfortunately, when we do that, we're not listening, so we don't have a good idea of what the other folks are asking us for. What I always encourage my clients to do, and what I would encourage advocates to do, or maybe even ourselves if we're lying there on a hospital bed looking for some kind of help, is keep asking myself in the back of my mind, why is this person telling me this? Which causes me to then have to listen, and I can hear what they're saying. Sometimes, you know, maybe I could just actually ask, why are you telling me this, and let them explain it, which gives us an opportunity to understand what they want. That's where the key to solutions or compromise lies. We all could say something like, I want your dog to stop barking. Well, what's the other person supposed to do with that? There aren't very many options. But if somebody, for example, says, I'd like your dog to stop barking because I have to sleep, I work third shift, now we can start exploring options that would work for both of us. Maybe earplugs would help one person. Maybe keeping the dog inside for some period of time would help the other one. So there are paths to find your way through all of this.
When we think of conflict, we think of people talking and shouting, and we don't think of the silent end of that. But then when I put myself in a hospital situation, I call this the silent conflict, that there's no shouting or yelling involved. But so many times, your physicians, nurses, patients, and advocates, they come together almost as opponents rather than partners. And you can feel and sense that tension, that no one's really listening to each other. What can we do to avoid that?
Well, first, I suggest that you read your book.
Uh-huh.
I mean, there is so much good information in there so that somebody can be prepared. Being prepared is really more than half of the battle. Then, secondarily, the next step is to pay attention, first and foremost, to yourself. Stay calm and listen. And as you're hearing people talk, reflect back on people what they're telling you. Don't parrot them, but ask or say simple things like, if I understand you, you want me to do this, 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 whatever it might be, comma, can you help me understand why? Elicit their help, elicit their cooperation, as opposed to being demanding or pushing your own thought forward. What you can also do is what I call going to the balcony, stepping above the conflict and looking at the two players that are in there, yourself and the other person, and asking yourself, how am I contributing to this? Is there something I could do better? Am I actually really listening? And then sort of the last thing I think always works is to make sure people are focused on what it is that's being discussed. Sometimes you'll wind up in a situation that we find very frequently in our American culture where people are doing crosstalk. Somebody says something, and then the next person says something that's not even connected. So somebody might say, for example, wow, the weather is dismal out there. And then the other person responds, boy, the room in here seems to be warm. That's a disconnect. So focusing on that to make sure everybody's talking about the same thing can be helpful. Also, in trying to elicit support from people, if you say simple things like, I know you are busy, but can you please help me understand? Then I can better help you with whatever that might be. again, people are always wanting to help. It's a subconscious thing that's built into almost all of us. And if you can open the door for them to walk through it, most people will, in fact, do that.
Oh, you and I are on the same page. I say that to people all the time. If you ask for help, and if you thank people for helping you in such a way that they realize you really needed that help, could you please help me? How many people are going to turn that down?
Not many, especially if you thank them. People really love that reward.
Absolutely. Thank you. I used to say that all the time in the hospital with my mom. Thank you for helping me and my mom. It's like, wow, I think that's powerful.
Oh, absolutely. No doubt about it.
Well, talking about power, many times, though, doctors approach the patient as having power over the patient rather than having power with the patient. And you and I talked briefly about this before, about trained arrogance. So somebody comes at you with that arrogance already, and you're feeling subservient. You're wearing this nasty hospital gown. Your hair looks like heck. You know, you're not feeling as powerful as you might normally. Yeah. What do we do about that trained arrogance? How do we get past that?
First, you have to sort of, I guess, see it for what it is. I mean, recognize that you're not going to change that. This is something that's built in through years and years of training and experience. So you need to deal with what it is that you have right in front of you at the moment. Not all healthcare professionals are the same, especially when you get around folks that have been trained more recently. They seem to have a little bit different kind of attitude. As society has changed, they've kind of changed along with it. So you want to first and foremost recognize what it is that's in front of you. Then you need to be what I call firm and respectful. Not aggressive. These folks have invested a lot of time and energy in what they're doing. They hopefully know what they're doing, and they don't appreciate being challenged, but they do appreciate most often being in a helpful kind of position. So one of the things I recommend doing is stepping to the side of the doctors that are in the process. And by that I mean express some kind of recognition for what their challenges are. Most physicians anymore, especially in the economic situation we live in today, are really pressed for time. And simply saying to them something like, I know you're really pressed for time, but I really need your help to understand what's going on with my mother so that I can better help her and you. You've done two things with a statement like that. First, you've recognized what one of their challenges are. And second, you've offered to help in some way, which is going to help them relieve what their stress is. And then they're going to say whatever they're going to say. Remember to be firm, respectful. Don't allow yourself to become intimidated. It's important that you get the information that you need. So just calmly repeat what it is you're asking until you actually get an answer. And then immediately go through the process of saying, thank you. I appreciate the information. It was very helpful. People really remember when you say thank you. I know I do, and I know when I've worked with hospital staff, they always remember the patients that said a simple thank you because it differentiates you from the average person, and that's an important thing to do. One of the things I always caution people to do, too, is never embarrass a nurse or a doctor in front of each other. There's a lot of stress in the environment already, and they are very intolerant of that kind of thing. If you embarrass your nurse in front of that doctor, he or she is going to remember that, and it will make your life much more difficult as you go forward. These people are just exactly that. At the fundamental core, they are people, just like we all are. And as you think about what it is you like and don't like, most of the time that fits them absolutely as well. So just see the situation for what it is. You can't change it, so you just simply need to work with it. So if you are calmly and firmly assertive of what your need is and ask for their help and assistance, and remember to thank them, you will probably get a good result.
This is excellent advice. Folks, if you're just finding us, you're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, and we are talking with Marty Chadwick, a professional mediator and owner of Mediation Path, based in Gilbert, Arizona. And we are discussing conflict within a healthcare setting. Marty, I loved what you said. To recognize, say, I understand that you're in a hurry, but, and then ask for help and be respectful and firm, but I really need your help. And then at the end of that, thank you so much for taking the time to help me. I think that is, just in a nutshell, some beautiful advice, not just for a healthcare situation, but for life in general. Now, if we as a patient or an advocate, we say we haven't preempted any argument, we're in the middle of a conflict, how do we find our way out?
My first suggestion is to do something that's called Go to the Balcony. It comes out of a book by Leon Urey called Getting to Know.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very inexpensive book, and I recommend it to everybody as great reading to understand how to resolve conflict. What is meant by that is, well, do you remember back the old theaters where they had balconies in them?
Yeah.
Where you could actually go upstairs and you could smoke in the balcony?
Yes, I remember that.
Yeah, and everybody went up to make out, of course. There's no doubt about
that.
Oh,
I don't remember
that. It was dark and quiet up there. Well, one of the advantages of being up there is you could also look over and see all the people that were down in the more mezzanine types of areas. If you do that in a conflict, you find yourself getting embroiled in it, just momentarily pause in your mind and pretend that you have gone up to a balcony and you're now looking down on yourself and the other person that's there and see if you can observe what's happening. Can you see how they're approaching you? Can you see how you're reacting to it? And that sometimes will give you a really good insight into what's happening. But what it also does is instead of you're just immediately reacting and jumping out there and saying something, you've stopped for 1 second, just long enough to make sure that you have still maintained your own control as you're going forward in the process. That control is important for discipline. One of the things that makes it easier to resolve conflict is to use I statements, not you statements. When you do this, I feel bad. If you just simply say, you're doing that makes me feel bad, that makes all of us defensive. And you don't want to make the other person defensive. That pause allows us to think for a second so that we can then phrase things appropriately. One of the other things to consider is allow a graceful way for the other person to retreat. Help them write some kind of a victory speech, if you will. Stay away from, aha, I won, you lost. See if you can find some way to allow them to be able to say, I did get something back from this, and that will help a lot.
So let's say I'm a patient lying in a hospital bed. What are the ways I can quickly build relationships as a way to preempt a conflict? We talked about asking for help and thanking people. Is there anything else we can do?
Yeah, just be a real person. I mean, you really just need to be a person. I mean, have some humor, have some smile. I know sometimes it can be difficult, especially if you're the individual that's suffering some level of pain or discomfort, but that humor goes a long, long way. People generally always want to help people and identify with people who are naturally friendly because they see them as possible friends, I mean, just the way we all think. If you do that, you not only do you get potentially better help, but you again stand out from the crowd and people will remember you. And I've had occasion to, unfortunately, many times to get in a cath lab. And so I'm in there maybe every 6 months, every year. And over the years, most of the nursing staff remembers me only because I related to them as another human being and not as a servant or somebody who was just there to give me a hard time with a bunch of rules. Just keeping it on a person-to-person basis gets you exactly where you want to be.
And I think in a hospital setting, it's really important to have somebody with you, an advocate, because if you're not feeling well or if you're under anesthesia or you're under the influence of drug side effects, you're not going to be able to be your normal, pleasant self. So I think it behooves people to think ahead of time, like, who would my advocate be? And maybe have these conversations with them, little training so that they know how to deal with the healthcare providers in the same way that you're speaking of.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. I agree.
Well, Marty, how can our listeners find out more about you and what you do?
Well, a couple of things that they can do. One, they can go to my website, which is www.mediationpath.com, or they could email me, marty@mediationpath.com, or give me a call. It's 480-694-2273.
All right, good. Keep that in mind. What's your website again?
Mediationpath, P-A-T-H. .com.
Excellent. Do you have any final words of advice for us today?
A couple of things. One, just remember to be confident. You can do it. Remember, you can't get what you don't ask for. And all of these things we're talking about fits life overall, even with like your significant other. If you employ some of these techniques with that person, you'll get practice and you'll also improve your relationship with them. Also, finally, be very aware of first impressions. Wait until you've had an opportunity to get to know an individual before you form that impression.
Wow. This is such awesome advice. Thank you, Marty, for shedding some light on how we can better prepare ourselves to avoid a healthcare conflict and what actions we can take to create positive outcomes for all if we find ourselves in the middle of a conflict. I'm hoping that you can come back again and we can continue this conversation.
Sure. I'd be glad to do that. Thank you again for the opportunity.
And thank you as well. You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio. I am Pat Rulo, your hostess and author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, available at all of our live speaking events or at our website, speakupandstayalive.com. That's where you can also locate radio show times, dates, and station information. That's speakupandstayalive.com. And if you want to purchase the book but do not have internet access, it's okay to call me. Lots of folks order the book by phone, so give me a call, 440-725-5462. If you're just tuning in, you found a home. This is Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, with a news update. A few months ago, I did a segment on this program about ovarian cancer links to Johnson & Johnson's talcum powder, and I just wanted to bring you the latest development in the Johnson & Johnson talcum powder saga. A St. Louis jury has awarded a California woman over $70 million as a result of her lawsuit claiming that years of using Johnson & Johnson's caused her to be stricken by cancer. The trial began on September the 26th and ended on October the 27th. The plaintiff, Deborah Giannaccini of Modesto, California, was diagnosed with ovarian cancer in 2012. The lawsuit accused Johnson & Johnson of negligent conduct in the manufacturing and marketing of its product. This woman's lawyer told the Associated Press, "We are pleased the jury did the right thing. They once again reaffirmed the need for Johnson & Johnson to warn the public of the ovarian cancer risk associated with its product." Well, now the corporation is planning to appeal the decision. However, as Carol Goodrich, Johnson & Johnson spokesperson, said, "We will appeal today's verdict because we are guided by the science which supports the safety of Johnson's baby powder." Yet earlier in 2016, we saw two other lawsuits in St. Louis filed against Johnson & Johnson, which ended in jury verdicts awarding the plaintiffs a $127 million combined. Two other lawsuits in New Jersey, however, were thrown out by the judge after he claimed that there was insufficient evidence that talc leads to ovarian cancer. Around 2,000 other women, though, have filed similar lawsuits against Johnson & Johnson, and lawyers are currently reviewing thousands of other cases that have the potential to turn into lawsuits. In February of 2016, the family of a woman who died of ovarian cancer was awarded $72 million. In May, a South Dakota ovarian cancer survivor was awarded $55 million. Evidence showing that talcum powder can be linked to ovarian cancer goes back as far as the 1970s. If there is a clear link between Johnson & Johnson's product and the disease, the sheer magnitude of suffering and death caused by one product of one corporation is scarcely imaginable. So with this one, I suggest think before you sprinkle. And if you would like to hear the previous segment I did on Johnson & Johnson and ovarian cancer, visit the archives page at speakupandstayalive.com.
Tired of the same old presentations?
Can you forward to slide 38, please?
Are you looking for a new, out-of-the-box topic for your next event?
Want your group to leave inspired, informed, and satisfied?
No PowerPoint presentations and dim lights here. No snoring or snoozing goes on during Pat's presentations. To help your entire group, organization, business, or church stay safe during any healthcare or hospital experience, invite Pat to speak. Pick a topic from her website or request your own. visit her website, speakupandstayalive.com, or call Pat to discuss how she can make your next event fun, enlightening, and life-saving.
Want testimonials?
Go to the bulletin board link at the website for color pictures and comments from real people. Again, it's speakupandstayalive.com or call 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462.
You're listening to Speak Up and Stay Alive, Patient Safety Radio, and I am your hostess, Pat Rulo, author of the book, Speak Up and Stay Alive, The Patient Advocate Hospital Survival Guide, recommended by the U.S. Army's Medical Department on their reading list. And it should be on your reading list, too. That is, if you'd like to stay safe during any healthcare or hospital encounter. It's easy to read, covers over 17 different hospital hazards with special chapters just for women, veterans, children, seniors. If you don't have a copy, you really must order one today. Just visit speakupandstayalive.com or call me and order by phone. Lots of folks order the book that way, so call me, 440-725-5462. That's 440-725-5462. Well, we're running out of time, but remember, if you're looking for a speaker to enlighten and entertain your group, I'm your gal. Call me, 440-725-5462, 440-725-5462. And come back next week. Until then, I hope you have a healthy and a happy week. I am Pat Rulo, and I am your guide to safe and successful healthcare and hospital encounters.
Listen to Pat Rulo and Speak Up and Stay Alive Radio. Stay safe from little-known healthcare and hospital hazards. To learn more, go to speakupandstayalive.com. That's speakupandstayalive.com.